Yesterday we were having a conversation and you stopped it and you said that'll make a good cold open.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
No, do you?
Yeah.
Great.
You were telling me your favorite color.
Oh, yeah. Because we got some new fabric in and I was like, this one is basically it right here.
Yeah. And I said, I don't remember how I said it.
You said, oh, now I remember. Okay. My colors have a favorite attitude or something like that, where it was like, it's not a, I don't have a singular favorite color. It's a color attitude.
Yeah. I have a favorite attitude of color.
What is the attitude?
Contrast.
So it needs two colors.
Well, there is like a deep teal, but it's not just that deep teal that I love. It's like the attitude that that color brings to the world.
So what is that attitude then? Could you describe that?
I would maybe have to think about it, but it's bold.
Okay.
But it's not loud.
Like it's dark. Like it's bold, but it's not like a neon color.
It pairs well with others, but it can also stand alone. Maybe that goes against, well, no, I take that back. It pairs well with others, whether those are others within its same color family or outside of its color family. And it can hold its own when there's contrast.
It doesn't get lost.
Yeah. So that's why I like it.
It sounds like a cool person. Can I be its friend?
Yeah. Can that be me? Maybe that's what I meant by an attitude of color. I think a lot of different colors would fit that color personality.
Yeah.
So there we have it. This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today on episode 108, we're talking about how society quashes creativity.
Quashes?
Quashes.
Is that different than squashes?
Yes, because quash is technically like a legal term. It renders thing, it like rejects or voids things. So yeah, it is a real word. I did look it up.
Okay.
Just in case.
So you would say like, don't quash my dreams.
Yeah.
Instead of don't squash my dreams.
I mean, you could say either one, but yeah.
But it does have a different, so quash means like to impede?
Yeah, it means like if you're in a court proceeding and they're like, you know, they want to bring something forward. I'm not a lawyer. I did some light Googling to quash it.
That's all it takes to be an expert, light Googling.
Yeah, I know, light Googling. I just Google better than some other people. It just means that whatever motion or whatever that, or whatever action they're trying to take is just stopped.
Oh,
it's not going to happen.
Right. Okay. Yep. So it's different. It's squashing is like, it's still there, but it's just been smushed.
I guess so.
Okay.
I also like cues.
All right. So say it again.
How society quashes creativity.
Okay.
So we're going to chat about that today.
You brought this up. Was there something that brought it to your mind?
Well, when I was in my education to be a teacher, we often talked about this, about how the school system came to be and, you know, examining how it affects the kids that go through it. I mean, everyone goes through schooling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, is the system working towards creating productive or, you know, good human beings, or is it harming those human beings? And how do we, if it is harming human beings, how do we stop that?
Right.
So this is something that's always in my mind, whether I'm teaching a class or whether I am, well, mostly when I'm teaching a class, when I'm interacting with people who are like talking about their own creativity, who wonder if they are actually creative. They had to get to that point. And we've touched on this a little bit before about how in your teenage years you start comparing yourself to others. Mm-hmm. But I have a sneaking suspicion that even at a higher level, at a societal level, a cultural level, whatever you want to call it, the way that the world in which we live may not be a hospitable place for creativity.
Gotcha. So what we're not talking about today is how individuals quash creativity.
No, because I'm sure there was someone in your class who was like, that doesn't look like a horse.
Mm-hmm.
But
or how we like self-sabotage our own creativity. So it's all things that are happening on a societal or cultural level that could be quashing the creativity of an individual or of the entire group.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, I was starting to do some research on this because I was like, well, I know a little bit about schools, but, you know, how I wanted to get a little bit more information about that. So our school systems were kind of set up very similar to like a factory production line. You have a set batch of students, mm-hmm. and it's all based on, like, you know, when they come into school, or, like, quote, when that item was first produced. Mm-hmm. And as it goes through the steps, the grades of the school, they're, like, progressed on and on and on, with little regard as to how fast a student learns or how slow they learn or how they learn. It all has to be made efficient. So if you've got a group of kids where maybe half of them do better listening and the other half do better, you know, learning through writing, teachers don't have all the time in the world in order to do both. So they have to pick one. These are choices that teachers have to make all the time. So for the sake of efficiency, some kids will end up learning faster than others, but they still need to keep getting pushed on. So when a kid wants to approach a problem in a different way than a teacher is prepared to handle that, whether it's in math or in reading or whatever, or thinking about things in history, the teacher often has to say, no, we're not doing it that way. We're doing it this way. And so the kid's sort of creative thinking, or their creative alternative, or the way that they were going to be able to approach this learning process is then having to be pushed aside.
Quashed,
if you will. And this happens over and over again in schools. And it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Well, it's a necessary thing. Necessary for how everything functions now.
Yeah. Because you have to have efficiency. Like, we're not in one-room schoolhouses anymore, which we're not efficient. Mm-hmm. But we have so many students to try and teach that we need to have productivity and efficiency in order to get people the education that they need in order to become voting citizens, to go and find work, or to go on to further schooling. And so that restriction often limits the creative thinking of a lot of students. And it is kind of sad. How many times does a kid come home and say, well, I just didn't do well in this math class because I was doing it one way, but the teacher said I was doing the math wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because the teacher doesn't have time to work individually with each student about how they want to approach each problem.
And that's can make you question your intelligence too, not just your creativity.
Absolutely. Because when you're a kiddo, you trust all of the adults that are in charge. And so you assume if they tell you, sometimes teachers will say this, well, this is the right way to do it. Mm. That's the bad part on the teacher. Like, they have to be able to say, well, this is the way that we are doing it. There are other ways, but we have to do it this way. But often teachers don't have that language, or they're too tired to have that sort of language to use. And again, when I say creative thinking, I'm not just talking about, like, the arts and things like that. I'm just talking about kids having, like, newer approaches or different approaches to things, approaches to problems. So there you go.
Okay. So I, because I didn't know what you would call the episode mm-hmm. exactly, I thought of societal barriers to creativity.
Excellent.
So it's probably ends up being about the same.
Yeah.
And you kind of set us up for where this stuff starts, mm-hmm. and it starts in the school system.
Yeah.
We're
not here to bash the school system.
We're also doing the best it can with what it has. It's not just like public schools. It's all schools, right, that do that. It's just the nature of our education system in general, and the way that we think that people learn. You know, you can look at in Japan, how they study math mm-hmm. is completely different than us. And they give kids a problem, and then the kids just have to figure it out and then explain why, and then they learn the process. Mm-hmm. Like, there are other ways to approaching things than how standardized testing.
Montessori schools exist as well, which are more free-flowing mm-hmm. and encourage that creativity, but that requires so much more, like, resources and time that public schools can't do that. It's just not feasible.
So we're not having a conversation on schools. We're having a conversation on...
So that's the cradle of where this all starts.
Where it came from.
And of course, since all of us go through a school system, we carry it with us into society.
And even if you're homeschooled, you're still limited by what your parent or
you've got a set curriculum. Yeah, and they have, and they're pulling from their own experiences, which are going to be different than yours. And also, you're another human being with different brain chemistry. Yeah. You're going to think differently than your parents or whoever it happens to be teaching you.
Well, and your parent, even in homeschooling, there are still limitations. Like, no system is perfect because every system is limited and has inherent flaws in it. Okay. The first thing that pops into my mind when I think about societal barriers to creativity is how much emphasis we put on productivity.
Yes, that was one of mine as well. How much we're like, we have to get as much done as possible in the time allowed.
And that, so we have cliches like time is money. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to choose to spend your time doing something frivolous, like being creative, then it has to have some other value. Or if you're going to be doing something creative, then we have this, can fall into this mindset that it's the product of your creativity that is worth the time that you're spending on it.
Even if it isn't your side hustle, it's like, well, is what you make good?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end product or the result.
And we are a broken record when we talk about creativity being primarily about the process, not the product. And that flies in the face of an emphasis on productivity.
Yes. So if we take this into like the business world, where those phrases like time is money is something that is very, very real, you may not have time to spend on trying to innovate something, because it does cost money to pay people and have the resources available to sort of kind of tinker around and figure out new ways of doing things. But it is also, on the other hand, a necessary part of business, because if you stagnate, you know, if you don't grow and change, then your business isn't going to grow and change with the times and not going to last.
Here is a current example MakeDo is going through. I'm looking at a new, this is actually what I'm learning later in the episode, but we're looking at a new way to hold all of the information of what we do, participants, class rosters, tasks that we're doing, classes that we're teaching, supplies we need, all of that, all of that.
Yeah.
We're going to have to bring on some new systems to be able to do that. Figuring out those systems and manipulating them to fit our needs is a creative endeavor.
Because what we do is not solely just a business. It's also a nonprofit. And so that brings with it different factors and
partly,
categories.
But also every business is unique. So
this
even
is true,
if you are a coffee shop, you can't just take what another coffee shop has done and copy it directly. Like, everybody has to implement new tools to fit their unique situation.
That's a good point.
But it's going to take quite a bit of time to, like, right now I'm in the learning stage, so I'm watching a ton of YouTube videos. I'm kind of sketching out how I want our data to be able to relate to itself. And before, I would have always had a hard time counting that as my work time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think, oh, I need to work 40 hours a week, but learning something, figuring something out is not the productive part. So it doesn't count as the work.
Yes.
And that is false. Like, we need to build time in business, particularly, into like dreaming.
Well, there's planning. That part of it, but there's also what you're talking about is the expertise side. You're trying
the learning.
The learning piece. And I think a lot of corporations, businesses understand that professional development is important. And so they send people off to a, you know, whatever convention in order to learn and expand. But what also is important is also the motivation to do that. Like, in order to, like, the interest that you have in, you know, in learning those things. Because if you don't have interest, the learning is not going to stick as well. Mm-hmm. And the same goes for kiddos, too. So, I do think that the business world like understands some of that, that like, oh yeah, that is necessary. But I don't think that they put enough emphasis on investing in the like gaining of expertise in their people as much.
Also, you invest in people when you see a direct return on that investment, and professional development, you can't always track the return. And sometimes the return is just that you have more fulfilled staff that stays. So how can you track that sort of thing? So I think when people can see the effect that something has on the bottom line, they're willing to invest
in it. Sure, when it comes in numbers. But when you're talking about maybe having lower turnover, that seems not as important because you can always just have someone come in.
Well, and you can still make the numbers for it. But if you aren't tracking what is leading to it, like it just makes things a lot more complicated and a lot less cut and dry. And so then the people who are making the decisions with the money, looking at the budget, you know, but, I was trying to think of how I would change that. I guess kind of how we would have tips at the end. But like, how would we change that? Instead of an emphasis on productivity, what would encourage creativity? Like an emphasis on blank. I just thought of it, so I don't have an answer.
Okay, well, maybe we'll get to it at the end of this podcast. Something else that I think is a barrier societally to creativity is that we have to work together. We have to have some sort of like coordination. And so creativity can feel very individualistic. And so if you're trying to work with other people, sometimes you have to give up that, you know, that creative approach to something so that you can bring someone else in to work with you.
You mean you have to give up like your stake in it, or you have, like,
you may have to adjust how you do things, like let's, you know, or your creative approaches so that it's able to fit, you know, with who you're working with. So like if we take it back to the school example, we have standardized testing for, you know, for bad or good, we have it so that we can assess where students are regardless of where they live within the state. And you have to have some sort of data about how well kids are doing, and this is how we're choosing to do it. And we have chosen to do this sort of testing through basic like written questions. This may not be the best way to assess how someone, test someone's knowledge, whether it they do better because someone is talking to them or if they're showing it and doing it. For better or for worse, this is how we've chosen to do it so that we can measure evenly across the board. But it may not be the best approach for each student. But in order for us to have that data, it all has to be the same. Mm-hmm. So,
Say how you said it at the beginning again.
It's coordination. Like we have to give up some of our, you know, creative, innovative ways of doing things in order to be able to work together, in order to be able to like take what we're doing and pass it on to somebody else. Mm. Because someone else is not going to have the same style of thinking or problem solving that we will have. So we kind of have to adjust that. So it does kind of like squash that creativity a little bit. Well, I would like to do it this way. Well, that way doesn't work for everybody. And it's not easily standardized, which can fall into that productivity as well.
Mm-hmm. So. I thought that this was going to be the same when you started, but maybe it's not.
Okay.
I think another societal barrier to creativity is that we tend to function, at least as a society, in a scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, we tend to lean towards competition instead of collaboration. So I thought you were going to talk about collaboration there, but so if we're always in competition with other people, if that's how we see ourselves, or our success is dependent on beating someone else, then we quash the opportunity to collaborate, which is in itself a creative endeavor.
Yeah, because that requires creativity is taking things that are already present and figuring out new ways to put them together. Mm-hmm. That could be one definition of creativity. And if you're hoarding information because you're like, if this secret gets out, then, you know, my special, whatever I make or whatever we do, the secret sauce, everyone's going to have it. And so I won't, my business won't be stable anymore, but it doesn't, then other people are not playing with the same set of tools that you're playing with.
And you can still keep information proprietary. Like, you don't have to share the secret sauce, but what is harmful is when we hoard the process. Mm-hmm. So when you think, well, I had to go through all of this hard blah, blah, blah to figure out how to whatever, whatever. And then you say, if anyone else wants to get to the top of the mountain where I am, they need to go through all of that same like blood, sweat, and tears to get here. Instead of being like, but I found these steps that someone had put into the mountain and I used them. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of helping other people up, we it's like we see it as that there's limited seats at the table, or there's limited space on top of the mountain.
Or they think that the reason that they got there was because it was the process of figuring that out that led them to success. And so people have to go through that same process of figuring things out because it makes them better, because it gives them more grit. You know, maybe that's true in some cases, but I mean, we stand on the shoulders of humans past who have given us, quote, an easy way out of a lot of like very human problems.
Right. Like the top of the mountain that we might think that we're standing on isn't really the top. Like, the point isn't to just get at the top and stay there. It's to move our communities forward, right? To make things better. And so you can't have community, society, if you're at the top of a mountain by yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, looking down, making fun of everyone, struggling up the mountain. Like, it's more fun to have a party on top of the mountain with other people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I know how to replace that one is that we have to learn how to function out of an abundance mindset. And we have a whole podcast on that. I will link to it in the show notes. There, but like, when we can start to lean into collaboration and working with other people and sharing information and realizing that someone else's success doesn't come at the cost of my own, there's room for everyone, and success within a community just makes the community stronger, and it creates opportunities for even more success. It builds on itself. It's just not an atrophying system.
Yeah. So my last barrier that I have to creativity is control. That people, whether they have a consolidation of power, or they are, they like the way that things are, control can definitely quash creativity, because you have to do things this way, kind of like you were saying earlier. Because people like that power, or because they need that control in order to have productivity or efficiency. Or there are so many variables that are out there in the world, that creativity being one more, that's one that can easily be taken off. If like, well, if we just do it this way, then we know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to do it this way.
Yeah.
And so it feels like you can control that.
Creativity is a real gamble too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't know where a creative like rabbit hole is going to take us. And so if you, in the business world, if you're like, okay, person that I'm paying $50 an hour, sure, go spend 100 hours to try this new thing out, and you don't know what's going to happen, that can be really scary.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So sometimes we're trying to control the outcomes.
Yeah.
Or control, you know, we know where we're going to take the loss. We know, we want certainty. So
exactly.
I think it can be control over the people or the process, but also control over the outcome.
Exactly.
Cool.
Well said.
Okay, I have a few more.
All right.
I think a societal barrier to creativity is consumerism.
Yeah.
And how easy it is to just consume. So we know that there is, that we all have like this desire for creativity inside of us, but you can satisfy that quickly and temporarily by consuming something else, like through consumption instead of through production. And that, when I say production, I don't mean productivity. I mean like the process of doing something creative. So we're flooded with ways to zone out. And because of that, it can make us numb to our own creativity, and it makes us weak to the process of pursuing that creativity.
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of entertainment at our disposal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can through proxy experience pretty much anything you want. You want to know what it's like to be an expert chef? You can watch a cooking show. You can travel through watching so many different videos. You can experience all sorts of stories just by, you know, reading a book, watching someone else's creative endeavor, even scrolling through Pinterest where you're like, oh, that would be so cool to make that and that and that. It gives you that little hit of like mm-hmm. the possibility of what could be, but it doesn't allow you to go through the full process of creating something, making something, trying it out on your own. Because going back to what you said, creativity is a gamble. And so it may not turn out as well mm-hmm. as the thing that you are viewing. So we can numb out and get to, quote, experience all of these things. And I don't want to negate that they're not true experiences, because oftentimes, like when we experience the stories or art of someone else, it can make us feel things. But we also need the balance of being out there in the world and experiencing those feelings ourselves.
Consumption, we have to consume. Like, if you don't consume food, you will die.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that is just flat out wrong with the idea of consumption. It's just that if you only consume food and you also are not, like, eliminating...
moving your body
moving,
and, like, yeah.
Or, like, even moving that food through the process of your bowels, you will die. It's like
sure.
the sheep that die because they eat all of the food and then they get, like... there's like, it's something that happens oh. with sheep because they won't stop themselves from eating. I guess they don't feel full. Mm-hmm. And so they just like keep eating. And then their body shuts down and it can't process the food.
Yeah.
And so you can't just consume and never take time to process that. It doesn't even have to be that one thing you consume, that TV show you binged,
sure.
whatever.
No.
But like you also need other avenues.
So what I love about stories and books is it allows you to put yourself in someone else's shoes and allows you to kind of practice empathy over and over again in very extreme situations or experience emotions in different situations. And the productive, if you want to call it that, like the thing that you can take out of that is you can use that in your real life to change how you approach people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, when I was reading Harry Potter and like interacting with all of these kids through the eyes of the main character, what kept coming up was that you need to be kind to everyone, regardless of how society views them, whether they're the uber smart kid that no one likes or one of many kids that people gloss over or just the weirdo who like does their own thing. Be kind to all of them because there's value in each and every person. That along with so many other things in my life I've taken and used. So the consumption can be a good thing if you're then taking it with your creative mind and putting it together in a new way to then put out something good into the world. You need ideas and like context for things so that you can then put them together and problem solve. I mean, it's why we teach history. We teach kids history so we don't repeat it again. So we teach them those stories so that they can take those stories and know, okay, this worked for this particular country, and this did not. Let's not make that same mistake again. So that consumption of story is useful, but if all we did was study history and then do nothing to further, you know, our society, it would be useless.
And again, it's not that that the consumption has to be productive or has to lead to something, because that goes against what we were saying at the beginning.
I think it's a natural, or it should be, a fairly natural process that happens. You take stuff mm-hmm. in, you internalize it, and then it's going to do something to you. Mm-hmm. It might produce something bad or good, but something's going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Also, there is a difference between like watching a movie and reading a book, because a book inherently is going to force you to use your imagination.
Well, and
in
you
a
spend
way,
more time with a character as well.
Yeah. And you're like, you're you're engaging with the author in the story in a different way than something on the screen.
Well, and the thing is I mentioned movies, but video games is also an excellent way of storytelling as well, which I know might be a shocker for some of y'all, but there are some excellent games out there with excellent story writers. There's all different sorts of ways you can experience stories, but whether you are always reading books and you're not engaging with the outside world, or if you're always watching Netflix, or if you're always mm-hmm. playing video games, any overconsumption like you're talking about is going to inhibit your creativity as a human being.
Mm-hmm. We don't let ourselves or our kids just be bored.
That is very true. Mm-hmm. Now, I grew up on the very cusp of the internet becoming a thing. I'm just taking over your tip here. Just give me a hot second. And so I vaguely remember times where I was bored. I would make paper origami cats and I would play with them, or I would convince my mom to go out and buy me craft supplies because I had this idea in my head, and so I would just make things. I don't think I would have that same. And that's because my parents let us be bored. It's kind of a joke in our family that my sister would come up to my mom and be like, "I'm bored," or "I'm just saying silly things like that." And my mom was like, "Well, try and figure out what you want to do." But because we have entertainment so easily accessed mm-hmm. to us, you could just the easy thing is just to press something and watch it.
And I think that pressing something and watching it isn't enough either, because now you press something and watch it and then you're bored watching a show. So then you pull out your phone.
Because it takes too long for something to happen.
Well, or you also are oh, well, this is holding part of my attention, but I also need to pull out my phone and play a game. Mm-hmm. And so then we start consuming multiple things at once. And then that makes it to where we're really not giving our brain
because you're truly
downtime.
Not engaging with each individual yeah. story, whatever it may be.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I've got two more.
All right.
We, as a society, celebrate success and hide failure.
Oh, yeah.
And so what this does is it discourages taking a risk on trying new things. We don't want to, I mean, I'm like this. I don't want to go axe throwing if I think that I'm not going to be good at axe throwing.
Yeah.
So creatively speaking, we don't want to take a painting class if we know we're not going to be good at painting. We don't see the value of doing things where we think failure is going to happen first.
Typically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what we don't realize is that failure is just a natural part of everyone's process. Every success is mixed in with lots of failure.
It has to be because very rarely is anyone going to nail something on the first time. You have to find another draw to get you to start doing something outside of your comfort zone, because that is going to be where you now have a new experience and you can draw on that for your more creative, creative thinking.
And if you did nail something on the first time, is it because you actually knew what you were doing, or is it because you were lucky? Our failure, I think I've said this before, our failure is proof that our success is coming from us. That it's because we actually are learning and know what we're doing. If you're never failing and just having success, how do you trust your success?
Yeah, I think there are some people who are just inherently have a particular talent for something.
Sure.
And so they do very, very well just on their raw talent alone.
Right, in that one thing.
Yes. But life is more than just whatever it is that you
but
are
most
excellent
at. But even if they want to go further, they're going to have bad days.
Oh, so there has to be training.
Even if you have someone who just happens to be a good runner, sure, they can run faster than me, someone who was not born to run. But if they want to win an Olympic gold medal,
they have to train.
Yeah, and they're going to have days where they can't run and they feel like lead.
Mm-hmm. True.
So once you try to get beyond that beginner trying things out, failure will exist. And they're going to fall down. Come on. They're running around all the time and they never trip. Give me a break. That leads into my last one, which is why I think a huge societal barrier to creativity is the phrase, fake it till you make it. Because we are emphasizing again the success and the productivity instead of authenticity and letting people in on the process and things that are part of our journey.
I think some internal fake it till you make it is okay. If you have to like kind of trick yourself into being like, I can do this, even though you are unsure if you can't, like self-talk mm-hmm. into that. So that you can then attack something with the confidence of, yeah, I can do this, even if you are unsure, so that it allows you to potentially make it more than if you would have just been like, ooh, I'm unsure, and don't have the confidence to pursue that.
Yeah, I think that that's what a lot of people mean when they use the phrase fake it till you make it, but I think that there's a better way to say it, like, hyping yourself up. You are being genuine in that moment. It's not like a faking it. Telling yourself, no, I can do this, is genuine. So it's if you can use that phrase and you authenticity is a part of that process or how you're holding that, then I will allow it.
You'll allow it. Well, good.
Yeah.
Good.
But how I see it, or the damage that I see being done from that phrase, is that when the people that we look up to
mm-hmm.
are only showing the good things. So this, I guess, is where it connects to celebrating success and hiding failures. When people aren't being authentic in their own imposter syndrome and their own doubt and their own questioning, then it makes the people behind them who are looking up to them kind of put that person on a pedestal, and they're not seeing like the real.
So here's another way that you could go at that. Some people need that fake it till you make it, because if they are vulnerable with their own imposter syndrome, the rest of society will see it as a weakness and they will use it to take them down. So they rely on that illusion of having it all together, because our society isn't okay with failing. And so if you show off that, like, well, took many tries to get here, then our society is like, well, then you are a faker, and are less likely to engage with whatever that person is offering. So I can understand why some people would be like, I have to keep up, as they call it in the wrestling world, got to keep up this kayfabe to, it's true. You have to kind of keep up the lie.
Mm-hmm.
So that people will still keep engaging with your stuff, because our society we're not chill with failure yet. We're just not there.
So that's just proving like it's a societal barrier to unleashing creativity.
Yeah, true. There you go.
All right, that's all I got.
Excellent. All right, so I read this most excellent article in Harvard Business Review. It was called How to Kill Creativity.
Mm.
And I can't pronounce this lady's last name. I apologize. It's Teresa Amabile. Anyways, you can go and check out her article. And she outlines a few different ways in which we can increase creativity within systems. Specifically, she's talking about business. But as I was reading through this, I was like, oh, this is what we try to encourage in schools. As like best practices in teaching. So I think these ideas can be like expanded into other systems as well. What have you got in your chamber over there for the end
of our podcast? Oh, I didn't write anything.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's go through. So number one is to challenge. Like, challenge is important for creativity because it forces people to come up with like new ideas and how to approach something, because maybe they've never done it before or it's a little bit more difficult. But the trick to it is you have to challenge someone in a way where it is just enough. If it's not enough challenge, people get bored, which boredom can be a sign, you know, it can help you with creativity because you're trying to figure out how to not be bored. But if we're talking about like a system like in school or at work.
But what you're talking about is you don't want people to disengage.
Yes, you have to keep people engaged. And if it's too difficult, then they're just going to totally shut off. So if you're giving a kid something that's way too hard for them, they're just like, I'm not going to engage with it. So challenging. That helps with creativity. Any thoughts on that?
No, keep going.
Okay. Freedom. So in school, we call this freedom of choice. When kids feel like that they have the ability to kind of to pick and choose how they want to approach something, mm-hmm. they become, again, more engaged, mm-hmm. and they are more likely to put things together in a new and interesting way because they have the freedom to do that. But it gives them ownership of their process,
right.
which is like a big part of creativity is finding your own process for whatever you are trying to do. So in like larger systems, it's allowing people to find their own little ways of doing things. Now, this doesn't mean letting them do whatever they want and pick whatever they want. It means that, okay, here is this, you need to do a book report. Like the kids don't get to choose how to do that, but they get to choose the book that they do it on. Mm. They have certain parameters. So it's like, yes, you have some choice, but there's like some boundaries on that. So that helps with creativity as well.
Well, in the business world, it would be, here's what we need to accomplish in our business. Go do it.
Yeah. Instead of like micromanaging and like dictating how they have to do it. Okay. Next one is resources. Like I talked about before with like Montessori schools, they have a lot of resources, but that requires a lot of money and time to be able to utilize that, and resource and money and time are resources. So if you are making, like specifically in the business world, she mentioned making deadlines too tight. Like if you are expecting a lot, this kind of also goes back to challenges. If you're expecting a lot within a short time frame, you're going to end up with burnout. Mm-hmm. And when someone burns out, they disengage and they're not going to attack their job creatively. Or if you end up with these like fake deadlines where it's like, oh, I gave you this deadline, but it actually wasn't the real deadline, or this wasn't the actual goal. Here's the real goal. It doesn't allow for trust, which is a part of creativity. You need to be able to know that you have the trust of wherever you're at, whether it's in a classroom or in your office or in your home, that your creative pursuit, you will not be harmed in your creative pursuit, or you know what to expect in that, like, you'll be safe. Does that make sense? Like in my classrooms, we always try to make it a safe place to learn and to explore. So if you do fail, it's all right.
Right.
We're going to be able to fix it. Or if I tell my kids, all right, I need you done by this time, and then they get finished with it at that time. And I'm like, oh, well, I gave you that fake time so we could have, you know, an extra 10 minutes to clean up. They're not going to trust me in my guiding them through the process and like leading them through. So then they're not going to want to try, and they're going to want to disengage.
Okay. Was that trust or resources, or they were the same thing?
Resources.
Okay.
But
sorry,
like, there is.
I was tracking where you were saying with trust, but I was trying to pull it back to
basically like be honest and truthful with what your resources are. Just be clear. Like, here's what we've got. You can do what you like with it, but here it is. Mm. Instead of, you know,
okay,
maybe being stingy or, I guess, lying about it. Okay, the other one is if you are trying to foster creativity, you need to have a supportive group. So this is where make do comes in. This is where a good classroom dynamic comes in. When you have a group of people that are supportive of you in your creativity, people you can bounce ideas off of. Joe, right now you are taking a few different, I don't want to call them classes, but you're engaging with people in the like nonprofit community. Mm-hmm. And you are able to like get new ideas from them, and you're able to give them ideas, and it's allowing you to find creative ways to make do better. Mm-hmm. So having a good team that is supportive, whether it's other nonprofits or just your team that's within your job, or it's your other classmates, it's important to have a supportive community that will help foster creativity.
Yeah. And where there's an emphasis on, back to abundance mindset, the free flow of information, sharing your own process and what you've mm-hmm. learned, making space for other people to do that, collaborating instead of competing with the people in that group.
Yes.
If everybody on a team, like this is why I could never be in sales, because if the point of the team is to beat everyone, well, actually I would be good at this. I just wouldn't like have any friends. if the point is to obliterate your coworkers because you outperform them, then that creates like this dog eat dog world. Yeah. And there's no opportunity for like creativity in that.
No, there's just a, how do I survive? Yeah. And surviving is not, that is a barrier to mm-hmm. creativity. If you're so focused on just trying to make it. So in tandem with that, whoever is like the like head or the leader or the teacher, whoever is guiding everyone through this, they need to offer support freely and often. Mm. And not just like bribe them with rewards. You need to be specific about what you like about whatever the creativity is going on in your whatever team you're leading or guiding. And you need to give it often because people need that positive reinforcement. So if you're not in a creative team, maybe you get that reinforcement from some positive accounts on Instagram that are encouraging you to, you know, move forward, think freely, and are applauding people who are doing that. There's many different ways to get that positive affirmation, but that's definitely what's going to help in your creativity. And lastly, and this goes in with like basically everything that I've just said, is transparency. This like freely giving.
See, that is, I guess, the counterpart of the fake it till you make it. Yes. For me is the transparency.
It's the freely giving like of information and ideas about, okay, this is how much resources we have. I really do appreciate the way that you think and approach these problems, giving that positive affirmation. It's knowing that you have the, you know, freedom and choice to be able to attack a problem in the way that you want to. It's knowing that things will be, you know, that it's basically having all the pieces in front of you and knowing what you're working with, whether it's in your job or at your school, just knowing and understanding how the rules work and how you can play with those rules, knowing the boundaries. And a lot of times with people, we kind of like hide those things for some reason, or we don't talk about them because we assume that people know, like, well, they know that they need to get this done quickly, or they understand the reason why we can't use that particular resource. Like, they know, they may not. You need to have open, free communication and have a complete understanding of what tools and what resources you have at your disposal. That's what's going to make creativity really flow. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's it.
Cool. I guess I would add that on a personal level, ways to fight what society is teaching us is that every minute of your day does not have to be accounted for. As far as being productive, you can do things just for the sake of because you like them or because you want to try to be creative or whatever. Like, you don't have to justify the ways that you're spending every minute of every day to prove that it's coming out to be something productive. Mm-hmm. So trying to fight the demand that things be productive. Let yourself be bored sometimes and just see, like, even if that means like you're just sitting on your front porch without your phone, like set a timer inside so you can hear it. I mean, if you can't,
or like you've gotten through that video fatigue on your phone and you set it down and you're just sitting on your couch and you're like, well, what am I going to do next? Instead of picking up your phone, just kind of sitting there for a moment in that.
Yes. Like, I moved my TV and I've actually kind of really loved it.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before. Yeah, on the podcast.
Like, I spend a lot of time just sitting on my couch, like with Pip, thinking about stuff. I'm like an old man just sitting on the front porch,
contemplating things.
Yeah, like give yourself time to be bored. One caveat I want to give to my how much I detest fake it till you make it. I don't think that means you have to be your whole self in all that you are in every situation with every person.
Ugh,
like, yeah, that's not what I mean. And having a protecting parts of our personality, protecting ourselves, is not the same thing as faking it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I just want us to be kind to ourselves, and there's a better way to be kind, to hype yourself up. And you know, you don't have to be that. You need people in your life that you're not having to fake it with. Maybe I will just leave it at that.
A good community.
Yeah. So those were the tips that I would add. Yeah, personally, I have to work really hard not to make everything a competition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really have to work hard to genuinely collaborate.
Yes.
It's easy for me to collaborate when I think I have the upper hand in a mm-hmm. situation, because then I'm still winning, even mm-hmm. though I'm collaborating. So that is personally something that I have to do to fight that societal barrier of competition, is like, think, how can this be mutually yeah. beneficial and genuinely collaborate without making things a secret competition?
I often struggle to figure out what resources I actually have at my disposal. So oftentimes sitting down and writing down, okay, what tools do I actually have to get this done, will oftentimes allow me to be like, oh, well, I could do this. Whereas before I've got like tunnel vision and I was like, this is the mm-hmm. only thing I can do because this is the very few resources that I have.
And speaking of specifically in a creative mm-hmm. endeavor, like if we're sewing, getting out all of our material and seeing what we have, or if you're coming up with a new project, a new kids class, going into our supply closet and actually looking at
mm-hmm.
the supplies that we have is an example of laying out resources. But I think we can do that in our the other areas of our life too. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, there you go.
Cool.
All right, what's your sweet this week?
My sweet is, I have two. One is Pip has just been on some really, she's just learning some really good behavior.
Well, you've put in a lot of good tools and a lot of good practices to get her to start behaving. Yeah,
we have brought in some new resources.
Yeah.
And it's working, and she's like chilling out in the space, like she chills out at home. So that's one sweet. Mentioned it last week. Well, I've been mentioning it on our Insta stories like nonstop. So if you follow us there, then this won't be new to you. But last week, what I was learning was how to design it like digitally.
Yes.
But now I'm actually testing it out and making it, and the class starts on Thursday. So I'm just like so excited about it.
That is indeed mm-hmm. very exciting.
What's your sweet?
My sweet is that I discovered a new recipe that I really like.
Mm.
I haven't cooked with
it. Is it a sweet recipe?
No.
Oh.
I mean, it's a stew. I love me some stew. And I'm getting to cook with leeks, which is quickly becoming one of my favorite vegetables.
Huh.
And it has bacon in it. So I'm like,
well, there you go.
I just haven't cooked with bacon in a while. I'm like, man, I forgot how good bacon was.
So what's the broth base?
Well, actually, there's not really much of a broth base because it's just water, but it's thickened by about half of the fat that's in the bacon. And then you kind of like pan fry the chicken that's covered in flour. So that fat and flour mix together to almost make like a roux. So it helps to thicken basically the water that's been flavored. It doesn't look white because when you make a flour roux, it looks more like a, I don't know.
When I think of stew, I always think of brown.
Yeah, it's brownish, but not like,
okay,
super brown. I don't know how to put it.
Like, I'm maybe asking.
Have you seen a white chicken chili before?
Yeah,
it kind of has that kind of color.
That's what I meant by white.
Yeah,
like it's
not cream based.
Yeah.
It's not like a potato soup.
It's on the chicken side, not the beef side.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. What's your sour?
I pinched the crap out of the inside of my arm this morning.
Yeah. Joe has quite the bruise
and
on the
it
other
hurts.
Side. Yeah.
It's like the blood bruise. Well, I guess all bruises are from blood,
yes.
But it's where it pops up immediately. God, it hurts.
It looks awful.
What's your sour?
I've been in a really bad mood the past few days. Just hasn't been good. And I'm trying to figure out why I'm feeling this way and trying not to take it out on my poor spouse. But yeah, it just seems like little things can set me off. And I guess I got some stuff to work through. So Yeah, I'm just trying to get out of it.
And sometimes the only way is through on those.
Yeah.
I just need the days to pass.
Yes, I just need to, I still need to inspect my feelings, but I know that these feelings will not last forever.
Mm-hmm.
They might if I don't do anything about it. But, you know.
And sometimes when I get like that, it doesn't matter. It's just hormones.
It's true. Could be.
There's nothing I can do about it.
Could be.
Indeed. I am learning a platform called Airtable. So I mentioned it earlier, but it's going to hopefully replace everything we have in Google Sheets right now and make it to where we're just more, I don't want to use the word efficient, more aware of our resources, mm-hmm. more aware of how things are connected. Hopefully it will do a lot of things automatically and eliminate a good chunk of the time we spend on admin. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited.
Excellent. Well, I'm learning how to DM a bunch of 10-year-olds.
Well, and tell us what DM means, because it doesn't mean direct message.
No, it does not. Dungeon Master.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a different set of skills than when you're working with adults. Not that I've DM'd adults either, but yeah, it's a whole new set of skills. And hopefully it goes well, because next week is our first, like, really, truly... we're actually playing the game.
And if you haven't listened to our episode on Dungeons and Dragons, what Madison is referring to is she's like the one who's leading
the story
kids through the campaign.
Yeah. So,
well, cool.
Yep.
I was here for the last Dungeons and Dragons class and could just overhear them a little bit. And
they love that role playing bit, but I'm going to have to start making some, encounters, some fights. So ooh. I have to come up with some like villains and henchmen. And
they won't fight each other.
No, they don't. They work together.
Yeah.
In order to do
they
that.
Collaborate.
They collaborate. So should be fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, another day, another podcast, another conversation complete.
All right. Y'all have a lovely week.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you to my dear, dear friend Craig Hudson for our very createful theme music. You can hear more of Craig's music on Spotify under Craig Hudson, that's Hudson with a T, or you can just click on the link in the show notes. Also, be sure to connect with Make Do on Instagram at MakeDoCreate or on Facebook at MakeDoCersei, and visit our website, MakeDoCreate.org, for upcoming classes, show notes, to order a face mask, lots of things.